Everybody, thanks so much for listening to Fire Breathe and Rob. If you're listening to us on the podcast, we are on Apple, Stitcher, and also Spotify, along with Google Podcasts and 100 different other ones too. So you can listen to us on any one of those. Obviously, I just named the main ones because those are the ones that mostly people listen to. If you are listening to us on YouTube, also thank you for that. If you are listening to us on the radio, I thank you for that. So there's many platforms we are going on. We're really trying to pump up the numbers and we're being successful so far. So I really appreciate everybody for the, you know, listening and also really helping out get the word, because these are amazing people that have done amazing things around our country and around the world. And we're, you know, very grateful that they come on the program. Today we have Judy Scott coming on, and she's done amazing things throughout her life. We're going to talk about her book first, but then we're going to dabble into a few other things. So, Judy, first of all, thanks so much for coming on the program. We greatly appreciate your time today.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Fire Breathing Rob.
We're going to talk about this book, but before we even get into it, Judy, can you tell the viewers a little bit about you in general?
Sure. I'm a Jersey girl. I was born in Kearny, New Jersey. I like to say it's scenically situated between Newark and Jersey City. grew up there. Had an opportunity to go out to Los Angeles for college and jumped on that. And when I got out here, it was like, wow, there's no winter. I'm staying. So I've been here for over 40 years now.
I hear you.
Yeah. It took me 8 years to get through a bachelor's degree because I kept quitting, partly because my parents didn't have any money. So I had to quit and work and earn money to go back. And also because I love traveling. So I actually quit twice to do a European tour. And this book is a result of my second tour when I stumbled and literally stumbled on the island of Hydra, or as we call it in Greek, Idra. I was on my way to Istanbul, really looking forward. I was traveling with a bunch of people and they said, you know what? We'd like to see maybe one more Greek island before we move on to Istanbul. And I said, okay, but let's try and find a close by one. I don't want an overnight ferry trip again. We just had one. And so they went off to the Greek travel office and the brochures there, people said, here, this is the perfect island for you. It's only 3 hours by ferry. There were no hydrofalls in those days. And it has no cars and it's very beautiful. So we said, okay, let's go. And off we went. When we got there, my friends were like, let's book four nights at this little pension. And I said, let's just book three nights because, you know, it's kind of empty right now. It's the beginning of May. If we want the fourth night, we can, you know, we can, I'm sure we can stay, but I really want to get going to Istanbul. So we did. And the second day I was there, I ran into this group of people at a taverna. They invited me to join them. I was in a bikini. I was, you know, tanned and probably looked as good as I've ever looked in my life. And I joined them. One of the gentlemen there was a very wealthy Greek man. The book is actually dedicated to him. He was became a lifelong friend. His name was George Lialios. And he was also a very good friend of Leonard Cohen's, which I found out after I moved into one of his guest rooms. And one of the first people I met at his house was Marianne. The song is So Long, Marianne, but everyone calls Mariana by the Norwegian pronunciation, including Leonard, always in referring to her. And we had a very nice conversation, she and I, and I said, well, I think I'm leaving in a week to go on to Istanbul. And she just looked me up and down and said, this is a really special place and you belong here. You should stay. And I did. And the rest is kind of history. A couple weeks later, Leonard showed up and Marianne was like, well, you can't leave now. Leonard's coming. I was like, if anything could keep me from leaving, it would be Leonard Cohen is coming, because I was a very big fan of his. I had all his albums and used to sing all of his songs. And so I got to meet him and you know, we became friends. And it was an incredibly lovely time in my life.
So, you know, when we talk about this, and we'll get back into the book, but this kind of has something to do with the book. you know, this is targeted to a lot of millennials that listen to this. So a lot of them, and we've talked about this on past shows, they're not really outgoing. You know, some are, some aren't. But, you know, there's a lot of people that are just glued to their phones, and then I'll be walking past somebody and they'll be getting ready to walk past me and they look down on their phones, and then you turn around and you see them looking back up again. So kind of what I'm getting to is, you know, meeting all these people on this island that, you know, you had never been to before in your life. Were you always outgoing like that? Or, you know, how did you meet all these, you know, famous people in general?
Yeah, well, I think I was, you know, an extrovert without a doubt. Mm-hmm. And back in those days, yeah, there were no iPhones. You know, I do tend to get glued to mine sometimes, but there were none then, and there was no email, and even on Idra, there were no televisions. We got Armed Forces Radio, which was broadcast out of Athens, the Armed Forces base, American base in Athens. And outside of that, really the recreation was one another. So, you know, if you weren't really into being social, it was not the place for you.
Right. Can you talk about the benefit of traveling all over the world while you're young and just learning all this, these different cultures and really getting along with different people from different religions and different cultures in general?
Yeah, it was, I mean, back in those days, we were backpacking. We literally were hitchhiking. It's probably not as popular now as it was then, or as safe for that matter. But it was, you know, it was fun. I mean, it was, you know, there was a lot of partying. There was a lot of drinking and going around to all the famous places together. There's a really nice, it's almost like, because I used to work in the film business, and it's almost like what happens on a film set. You develop an instant family. You're doing this one kind of activity, whether it's traveling or making a movie, that really binds you together. And that's how I found it to be, you know, staying at youth hostels and just meeting all different races and nationalities of people, all interested in the same thing, traveling and seeing the sights and getting to know the world. So yeah, it was instant family. That kind of led me to the family of Leonard Cohen in Idra. It wasn't unusual to develop these very quick attachments.
I do want to go more into the book. And for people that are just tuning in, again, this is Judy Scott. The book is Leonard, Marianne, and Me, Magical Summers on Hydra. In 1973, you did do that backpacking trip. What was that? Were you friends with all these people? Did you just meet up with these people? How did you come to travel with all these people to Europe back in 1973?
Well, I initially left, it was my second trip, and I did have friends there from my first trip. In fact, one of my dearest and oldest friends, I hitchhiked around the first time I went to Europe, which was in 1969. She's British, and she's still a friend of mine. She lives in Northern England. And so I wanted to see her again. There were other friends I had made on that first trip that I wanted to see again, in London, in Paris. And I just so enjoyed the first trip and all of the adventures I had, and it could be pretty adventuresome, that I couldn't wait to go back.
Right. So I don't want to give away the whole book. Can you kind of give a little synopsis of the majority? You know, you did stay the majority of the summer on Hydra. Can you kind of give some fun stories and why you wanted to spend that whole time there in general?
Well, certainly Leonard and Marianna were the fulcrum, focus, because they were so welcoming. I mean, I spent every dinner with them. I used to sing with Leonard. He actually at one point said, you know, Judy, you sing as well as any backup singer I've worked with. I can send you to Clive Davis if you like. Clive Davis at that time was the head of Columbia Records. And for reasons which I still actually can't explain, I said, thank you, Leonard, but I think I have to make it on my own. And in retrospect, I think I just had really terrible stage fright. And singing with him in his studio, in his little studio office, was easy. But auditioning for Clive Davis, I think I would have just fainted. And I guess I kind of knew that. But I mean, there were all kinds of adventures that I had. It's a big art colony. Idra is a small island. It's only 11 miles by 3 miles in diameter, in area. And there's a lot of artists that from all different countries that live there because it has no cars. It has very pure light. There is no pollution. You know, there's no exhaust fumes or anything like that. And so it makes rendering a painting very realistic. And I actually collected and to this day have about 6 different artwork from different artists, a British man, a German man, a Greek American man. It's just that kind of very creative atmosphere.
So do you feel like that's why a lot of these famous people really went to that island? Because of, you know, obviously Greece in the summer is probably amazing in general. I think of the movies where you see these beautiful boats and these people just having a good time on the boat. Is that why people were there, though, basically because of the art culture that you just spoke about?
That and just the physical beauty of the place. Mm-hmm. It was, you know, I mean, it was very popular. Mrs. Kennedy Onassis was there. John Lennon and Yoko Ono were there. Not at the same time I was necessarily, but a lot of really famous people made it their intention to at least visit this kind of well-known hotspot. It was a jet set hotspot, basically, in Greece.
So what do you want people to get out of the book, Judy?
That's a really good question, because I mean, you're right. The younger generation, I think, is not going to be as interested in Leonard Cohen, even though he wrote Hallelujah, which is probably his best known composition. And it's been covered by 200 different artists. Mm-hmm. But here's what I would tell the younger generation. 1973 really was the very heart of the sex, drugs, and rock and roll time. And there's plenty of that in the book. So if you're not that interested in, you know, culture and philosophy, and because I was a philosophy major, you'll find enough titillation and enough interest in just the other stuff that we got into, I think, to enjoy it.
Since you brought up 1973 in general, we've been talking about that year. You know, in the sex, drugs, and rock and roll. You know, I was born in 89, so I wasn't privileged to to know that era. But, you know, as a person that's, you know, very progressive, do you feel like, I'm talking about myself, of course, do you feel like that kind of generation is coming back with the millennials and the Generation Zs, that, you know, we're more open to trying different things. We're more open to marijuana, toward gay marriage, toward all these things that were, you know, taboo. Even in the 70s, you know, there were some of these things were taboo.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I am involved in a gay marriage right now. I've been with my partner for 39 years. It wasn't that easy back then. And that is another thing that I discuss in the book, that Leonard and Mariana, because they were so accepting and they knew, you know, hundreds and maybe thousands of people from all different walks of life and all different countries, really helped me to accept myself as a gay woman, or at least at that point in time as a bisexual woman, because it wasn't an issue. And it was, and obviously in the States it was, you know, with my family it was. And I guess that's one of the reasons why that was such a cherished time for me, because it really helped me to accept myself and be who I later became.
I do want to go back to the book in that aspect, though, because, you know, you did talk about Leonard Cohen and Mariana. Can you give us, you know, you did dabble with a couple of stories, you know, about talking about them, but can you go into some more stories, you know, as far as, you know, hanging out with them? Was there any kind of fun excursions that you want to open up? We don't want to give too much away because we do want people to read the book, but, you know, give us a little taste of some stories with Leonard and Mariana.
Well, Leonard was, he was really such a nice, open guy, especially in that environment. I think a little more guarded maybe when he was on tour, maybe when he was back in Los Angeles. But on Idra, it was just so accepting. But he was a joker too. He liked to fool around. And he knew that I was more attracted to Mariana than I was to him, even though he was a very attractive guy and a very sexy guy. And we were in the kitchen one time, and she was cooking and had her back to us. I was at the table with Leonard. And he said, "You know, Judy, Mariana doesn't really like you." And I said, "That's how much you know, Leonard." And he said, no, I mean, she doesn't really like anybody. And I said, "Well, no, because then she'd have to trust them, but she's crazy about me, Leonard." And Mariana just whirled around and put her arms around both of us and said, "You're both crazy, and I love both of you." And it was kind of like that. It was very lighthearted. That was maybe a little test for me, but, you know, Leonard was a player, and I'm kind of a player too. So I was up for it. And we used to go into Athens. Mariana and I would go into Athens quite frequently. I got all my mail at the American Express initially when I was living there. So I'd go to the office there. And we had some, I mean, one adventure I had, which was really traumatic, was we were having dinner at a place in Kolonaki, which is like the Park Avenue of Athens. And I ordered escargot. And ended up getting some bad snails and got invited to join Mariana that evening when we all went to bed, and ended up in the bathroom at 2 o'clock in the morning, just going, "Oh, this isn't supposed to happen like this," just kind of puking my guts out. But yeah, but it was fun. Every single day was something new. We went to art galleries. We had a very good friend who ran the Athens Center, where he would bring students almost exclusively from the US over for an in-depth and credited education about Greek culture, Greek history, Greek economy, and Greek language. And he invited us to go to that school. And I probably know about 100 words in Greek, and that's where I learned them. So everybody was great.
It's such an impressive story. I really hope people get out and read the book. Again, this is Judy Scott. The book is Leonard, Mariana, and Me, Magical Summers on Hydra. As we wind down the end of the interview, I just had a couple of questions that we got from the audience when we did say that you were going to come on, Judy. Sure. So we just talk about this, but even before we get into that, my last question is, would you ever go back to Hydra? Have you been back? Is it changed or?
Oh, Rob, I've been back about 25 times.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
Yeah. I have spent months and months and months there. The last time I was was October of 2019.
Right.
It's called the Idris Circuit. And it's I have a very good friend in from Montreal. He's a doctor and a singer and songwriter. And he said, and I think this is in the book, Idra is like a drug. It's addictive. And it is.
So has it changed at all? You know, we look at, I'm in Florida, and I told you that, but then we look at the changes that in the area that I live in Orlando near Disney World. I mean, they just keep building houses and there's so much traffic. I'm sure you see this stuff in California all the time.
Yeah. Well, the really good thing about Idra and about Greece in general, it's such an ancient country, and Idra is an ancient island, and it's protected by the Greek cultural administration. So for instance, you can't build a modern house. You can only build to the existing architecture. You can't build a fence. You have to build a wall. You can't build number of colors. It has to be whitewashed or just plain stone. So that maintains the integrity of the island as a historical, historically noted area in Greece. There have been superficial changes. First of all, now there are hydrofoils that get you to Idra faster than the old ferry boats did. That means there's a lot more weekend travelers. You used to, it would take 7 hours round trip before. Now it takes about 3.5. And with more people comes more garbage. And with modern conveniences and modern packaging, we used to get all of our stuff in these little paper bags that you could burn in your incinerator or your fireplace. Now everything is, plastic wrapped, Idra has a terrible time keeping up with the garbage because there are no trucks. There's just donkeys that, you know, collect all the garbage and take it out to the dump.
Oh, wow.
So that is something that you notice, not in the town itself. They keep that pristine. But if you're outside the town at all, you notice that, you know, there's a lot of trash laying around that never used to be there.
Has climate change hit that area?
Yeah, they're having a lot of problem with wildfires.
Oh,
and
wow.
They never had that. When I lived there, we didn't have wildfires. In the many years that I've gone back, we didn't have wildfires. There's been a big one just 2 weeks ago. I still hear from people on Idra all the time, my friends that live there. And they're really concerned about climate change and the absence of water. Idra has no indigenous water. Every house has a cistern to collect rainwater, and then they pump it in from the Peloponnese, which is 4 miles away, the Peloponnesian Peninsula, the mainland of Greece. But the water table's going down, and they're worried about that. Everybody buys bottled water now, and it's an increasing expense. They certainly, and the Greek government is very concerned about climate change. They have probably more activity per capita there taking care of that or addressing that than we do here in the United States.
So Judy, you know, you talked about being, as far as being LGBT, and you did start that cable television network. Can you talk about that? That's really impressive, I think.
Yeah, there actually were two. The one that I worked on and helped to buy byproduct from mostly, because what I did in the film business for 25 years was I was a film buyer. Basically, that means an acquisitions person. I looked for films that didn't have a distributor, either in the US or world, and I recommended them to a lot of them, not all of them, to whoever was employing me. And that point, it was 2004 I started it. Oh. I started working for them, and the network was called HERE, H-E-R-E, HERE, as in, we're here, we're queer, get used to it. I think that was that was the slogan of the network. And it's still ongoing now. I've been retired for quite a long time. It's a subscription network, and they still put on all kinds of gay featured films, cooking shows, some really classic older gay films like Boys in the Band and things like that. And they're doing pretty well. Right after we launched, about a year later, Logo, which was owned by HBO, launched, and they had a lot more muscle than we did, a lot more money. But they're still competitive. They're still ongoing, and it's nice. It was very nice to be the first to launch that was specific to the LGBT community.
So I guess for the last two questions, where can people get the book? As far as, is it on Amazon? Is it on your website? We like to give the money to, you know, mostly to the authors, not just to Amazon in general, but if it's only on Amazon, we can go there. But where can people get the book, Judy?
Well, I don't have a website because this is not a self-published book. I have a publisher. And so I am bound by contract to only sell it through the publisher. I get a cut, but I can't sell it on my own. It is on Amazon. It is also at Barnes & Noble. It's at 67 Barnes & Noble stores. It's also at Barnes & Noble online, barnesandnoble.com. It's at target.com. It's at walmart.com. And I've been telling all of the people that are interested in the interviews I've done, local bookstores really need support. Yes. And even though I don't get as much credit if you buy from a local bookstore, I encourage everyone, if you have a bookstore that you patronize, go and order it there. They'll order it for you. They'll buy it for you. And it really helps them out. Mm-hmm. In all honesty, Amazon doesn't need the help.
I agree with that 100%. You said it, not me, but I agree with you 100%. Like I said, again, for people that were tuning in, Judy Scott, Leonard, Marianne, and me. Again, Judy Scott, Leonard, Marianne, and me. Magical Summons on Hydra. Thanks so much for your time, Judy. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you, Rob.